A so-called stand your ground law is in effect in 22 states, including Arizona. According to the National Council of State Legislatures, at least 9 of those states use specific language that a person may stand his or her ground in response to a suspected attacker. Even with that number of states, it's safe to say most people were not familiar with the term until the case of George Zimmerman shooting and killing Trayvon Martin in Florida in February of 2012. On Saturday afternoon at ASU's O'Connor College of Law's Great Hall, a Stand Your Ground community forum will be held, including a number of guest speakers and panelists, and two of them join me now. Martin Quesada is a Democratic state representative and a criminal defense attorney. Zig Popko is the founding director of the Post-Conviction Clinic at the O'Connor College of Law, where he teaches a sentencing seminar and workshop. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Zig, let's start off with where Arizona fits in as far as the stand your ground law is concerned. What is the wording, and is there an actual stand your ground phrase in there?
There is no actual stand your ground phrasing. The way the Arizona statutes work it is that a person has no duty to retreat, and the duty to retreat part is the operative phrase.
And what's changed in Arizona? There was a change in 2010?
Yeah, there was. So here's what the law was. So before the Arizona Criminal Code was heavily revised in 1978, Arizona Supreme Court, even the territorial Supreme Court, held there's no duty to retreat. If you're being where you are lawfully and you're minding your own business and somebody attacks you, you can defend yourself. In 1978, the new criminal code came into provision, which said that you can only use deadly force if it was immediately necessary. And in 1981, the Arizona Supreme Court said, well, if you had the ability to retreat, that's a factor the jury could consider whether or not it was immediately necessary. And in 2010, the statute essentially removed that kind of duty.
Martin, since you're the politician, or I'll ask you this. When it comes to public policy, is there something indicative to you when, in 2010, this idea that Governor Brewer signed this law that would change things, would change the how things were interpreted, does that indicate you a way Arizona is turning on this issue? Does it say something to you about that?
Absolutely. That change in the statute in 2010, reinforcing that there is no duty to retreat, it's a drastic change in policy. And it's a change that's guided by a lot of the influences that this bill came from, the ALEC influences, the NRA influences. This is a policy that says that because you have no duty to retreat, that violent action is a preferred action in situations where there might be other options.
And what concerns do you have? Is there a situation where this could lead to more situations? Is there any indication that there have been more situations related to this?
Well, I think that's one of the main concerns, is that we need to look and see if that's actually the case. Does this lead to more violence rather than less? Does this lead to more victims rather than less? And does this lead to does this do the exact opposite of its intent and create more violent situations? That's what we need to examine. That's what we need to study. And our thought from our perspective is that these laws do work in the opposite fashion in which they're intended.
Zig, are you seeing any legal trends across the country that more states are interested in this kind of law?
I think because of the Zimmerman trial and what's been going on with that, a lot of states are thinking about it and talking about it. I don't know whether they're enacting them more or not. But to just pick up a point that was just made in terms of whether this is leading to more violence, people are studying that. There's a recent Texas A&M University study that came out not too long ago, and it was done by an economist and a grad student. And they looked at, and I don't have the study in front of me, but they looked at violent crimes going on with states that have enacted these Stand Your Ground laws. They find that murders generally are on the upswing, 7 to 9%, which to them was the statistically significant number. Mm-hmm. But they did not see a concomitant drop in assaults or violent assaults. So their tentative conclusions, at least, are that the Stand Your Ground laws aren't having the impact that the promoters want them to have.
As a legal expert, when you see laws like this going into effect by lawmakers across the country, whether it was 5 years ago or more recently than that, are you concerned about this? I know there's the fight occasionally between the judicial and the legislative branch and the executive branch, for example. Is there a concern that lawmakers are writing certain laws that maybe when you get down to it don't necessarily make sense from a legal point? They're more public policy questions than legal questions.
And that's that fine line. The judiciary is not supposed to be making policy decisions. We could argue about where that line is all the time. It is the legislature's job to pass laws that they think make good policy. But it's also the legislature's job to find out if that policy is actually working and to make tweaks to it if it's needed.
Martine, is that done enough, do you think? And that's something that could come up in January, I understand.
It is something that I propose to introduce in January. We do need a thorough review of this law, and let's see if it's working or if it's not working. That does happen. We do that every year. We reevaluate laws that we pass every single year. In fact, a large majority of the legislation that's introduced is a revision to a prior law that wasn't completely working the way that we wanted to. So to say that this law is different and that it shouldn't be reviewed is really going in the wrong direction. So that's exactly what we're doing. And the Texas A&M study is a perfect example of why they need to be reviewed.
What's your approach going to be in January? I know that our listeners are going to say, yeah, that's terrific, but you're also a Democrat. So how difficult is it going to be to get people to consider this issue when you're in the minority body?
Well, I am a Democrat. I'm coming from a minority perspective in the legislature, but I don't believe that a review of laws is a partisan issue. There have been Republican members that have said, you know what, review of a law is a good thing. It is a smart thing to do. We do that with all the other, with every agency, with lots of other bills, and we've had public support from Republican members that have said a review is not a bad thing.
Let's psychoanalyze a bit. When laws like this come up, is there the feeling that lawmakers, and this has been something Democrats and Republicans both do this, they want to appear tough on crime in the sense that they're protecting perhaps homeowners, that sort of thing, or people who are out and being threatened by unknown criminals, or perhaps they are. Is that a concern of yours, this idea that it could just be something to grab onto as opposed to being good law?
Well, I think that's what this law has been from the very beginning. It's been more of a political statement. It's been more of a campaign tactic rather than good public policy. And we need to eventually get away from that at the legislature and review these and see if it is good public policy. And that's what we're going to be asking to happen come January.
It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. I'm talking with Martine Quezada, a Democratic state representative and criminal defense attorney. Also here is Zig Popko, the founding director of the Post-Conviction Clinic at the O'Connor College of Law, where he teaches a sentencing seminar and workshop. Zig, we're talking about the issue, and it got a lot of hype when it came to the George Zimmerman-Trayvon Martin case. How important an issue is this for us to address?
I think it's an important issue because what the legislature did by changing the statute, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a good or bad thing. What the legislature did by changing the statute in 2010 was taking an issue away from the jury. The Arizona Supreme Court said in 1981, whether or not there was a safe opportunity to retreat or not, that's up for the jury to decide if the use of deadly force was immediately necessary. By changing the statute the way they did in 2010, the legislature said, you know, we're not even going to let the jury approach that issue, and we're just saying there is no duty to retreat.
Martine, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, taking that question away from the jury is a problem. Those are situations in which a jury of one's peers can look at that issue and determine, was it reasonable? Was this person reasonable in acting in the fashion that they did? Because we've enacted this policy now, we have told the public, we've communicated to them that your preferred method of dealing with these situations is violent action, is to use deadly force. That shouldn't always be the case. I think as a society, we should be striving to find the opposite, to find other ways to deal with these deadly situations.
Zeke, take us back about a decade or so. Harold Fish, I think, was the name of the person. I think it's a case that people who've lived here for a while may have heard of. Do you remember the background on it? There was someone hiking, and then he was with his dog, and one person felt threatened. How does that fit into... Would that have been sort of a precursor to Stand Your Ground?
It's related, and from my memory of it, the big issue there was who had the burden of proof, whether or not the person who did the shooting was acting in self-defense or not. The legislature, I forget exactly when, but sometime, maybe it was part even of the 78 criminal code revision that we had, changed the burden of proof, where the defendant had to prove by believe it was a preponderance of the evidence, that they were acting in self-defense. And in 2006, as a result of the Harold Fish case, a legislation was passed which basically restored what had been the prior law, which was that the prosecution had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was not acting in self-defense.
At its most obvious core, how much does that change things?
It changes things a lot. And I think if you talk to any prosecutor, they now realize that they have a fairly substantial burden of trying to prove that the defendant did not act reasonably, and they bear the risk of non-persuasion, that we call it.
Martine, on Saturday you'll be appearing on a panel with fellow lawmakers, both Republicans, John Kavanaugh and Eddie Farnsworth. Are there certain things you would like to come out in that discussion? Are there certain things that you might be surprised if you heard from your fellow lawmakers, or do you know exactly where they stand?
I think we know pretty much where they stand. They believe this is a good law. They believe this is a necessary law, and this is a Second Amendment issue is what this conversation usually evolves into. However, what I would like to see come out of that is an agreement amongst all of us that a review is not a bad thing. A review doesn't predetermine that it's going to be a good review or a bad review, but simply a review to see if things are working. As talking to experts, talking to prosecutors, talking to our defense bar, talking to the courts, and seeing what are the effects that this law is having on the state of Arizona.
Say, go ahead.
Just one point that I think the supporters of these types of laws, no duty to retreat laws, would say is part of what needs to be part of that conversation is when a person shoots and uses deadly force, they've already presumably been the victim of some kind of an assailant. And they fear that if they have to either prove that they acted in self-defense or prove that they could not retreat safely, they're being re-victimized by the system again. And I think that's part of their concerns, and that should be part of any conversation.
Only a minute or so left. Martine, you mentioned Alec, and Sig, I want to start with you. Is there concern from a legal or policy standpoint that there's a trend of laws across the country that perhaps this doesn't apply to Stand Your Ground, but in general, this idea that maybe there are groups left and right that want you to write this legislation, and it should be in many states, not just really in Arizona concern?
It pretty much is the case on this type of statute, and presumably with others as well. There are organizations out there. The NRA was a big motivating agency involved in the Florida enactment of Stand Your Ground and pushed it across, the ALEC organization that Martine mentioned. So that's happening.
Martine, a few seconds.
Yeah, the influence of organizations like ALEC on legislatures throughout the country is tremendous, and it's something that needs to be reviewed and discussed.
Democratic State Representative Martine Quezada, Zig Popko, founding director of the Post-Conviction Clinic at the O'Connor College of Law. Gentlemen, thanks for the time.
Thank you.